Chapter 11. Glimmers of the Pattern. For once, Ingtar called a halt to the day's march with the sun still golden above the horizon. The toughened Shinarans were feeling the effects of what they had seen in the village. Ingtar had not stopped so early before, and the campsite he chose had the look of a place that could be defended. It was a deep hollow, almost round, and big enough to hold all the men and horses comfortably. A sparse thicket of scrub oak and leatherleaf covered the outer slopes. The rim itself stood more than high enough to hide anyone in the campsite, even without the trees. The height nearly passed for a hill in that country.
"All I'm bloody saying," he heard Uno tell Ragan as they dismounted, "is that I bloody saw her burn you, just before we found the goat-kissing Hathman. The same flaming woman as at the Flaming Fairy. She was there, and then she bloody wasn't. You say what you bloody want to, but you watch how you flaming say it, or I'll bloody skin you myself and burn the goat-kissing hide, you sheep-gutted milk-drinker."
Rand paused with one foot on the ground and the other still on the stirrup. The same woman? But there wasn't any woman at the ferry, just some curtains blowing in the wind. And she couldn't have gotten to that village ahead of us if there had been. The village. He shied away from the thought. Even more than the fade nailed to the door, he wanted to forget that room, and the flies, and the people who were there and not there. The Hathman had been real. Everybody had seen that. But the room. Maybe I'm finally going mad. He wished Moraine was there to talk to. Wishing for an Aes Sedai. You are a fool. You're well out of that, now stay out. But am I out? What happened there?
Pack horses and supplies in the middle,
Ingtar commanded, as the lancers went about setting up camp.
Rub the horses down, then saddle them again in case we must move quickly. Every man sleeps by his mount, and there'll be no fires tonight. Watch changes every 2 hours. Uno, I want scouts out, as far as they can ride and return before dark. I want to know what is out there.
He's feeling it, Rand thought. It isn't just some dark friends and a few Trollocs and maybe a fade anymore. Just some dark friends and a few Trollocs and maybe a fade? Even a few days before, there would not have been any just about it. Even in the Borderlands, even with the Blight less than a day's ride, dark friends and Trollocs and Murdrol had been bad enough for a nightmare then. Before he had seen a Murdrol nailed to a door. What in the light could have done that? What not in the light? Before he had walked into a room where a family had had their supper and their laughter cut off. I must have imagined it. I must have. Even in his own head, he did not sound very convincing. He had not imagined the wind on the tower top, or the Amelin saying, "Rand!" He jumped as Ingtar spoke at his shoulder. "Are you going to stay all night with one foot in the stirrup?" Rand put his other foot on the ground.
"Ingtar, what happened back at that village?"
"Trollocs took them. The same as the people at the ferry. That is what happened." "The fade?"
Ingtar shrugged and stared down at a flat canvas-wrapped bundle, large and square in his arms. He stared at it as if he saw hidden secrets he would rather not know.
"The Trollocs took them for food. They do it in villages and farms near the Blight, too, sometimes, if a raid gets past the border towers in the night. Sometimes we get the people back, and sometimes not. Sometimes we get them back and almost wish we hadn't. Trollocs don't always kill before they start butchering. And half-men like to have their fun. That's worse than what the Trollocs do."
His voice was as steady as if he were talking of every day, and perhaps he was for a Shinaran soldier. Rand took a deep breath to steady his stomach. "The Fade back there didn't have any fun, Ingtar. What could nail a Murdrol to a door alive?" Ingtar hesitated, shaking his head, then pushed the big bundle at Rand.
"Here. Moraine Sedai told me to give you this at the first camp south of the Aranin. I don't know what it is, but she said you would need it. She said to tell you to take care of it. Your life may depend on it."
Rand took it reluctantly. His skin prickled at the touch of the canvas. There was something soft inside. Cloth, maybe. He held it gingerly. He doesn't want to think about the Murdrol either. What happened in that room? He realized suddenly that for him, the Fade, or even that room, was preferable to thinking about what Moraine might have sent him.
I was told to tell you at the same time that if anything happens to me, the lances will follow you.
Me?
Rand gasped, forgetting the bundle and everything else.
Ingtar met his incredulous stare with a calmed nod.
That's crazy. I've never led anything but a flock of sheep, Ingtar. They would not follow me anyway. Besides, Moraine can't tell you who your second is. It's Uno.
Uno and I were called to Lord Agomar the morning we left. Moraine said I was there, but it was Lord Agomar who told me. You are second, Rand.
But why, Ingtar? Why?
Moraine's hand was bright and clear in it, hers and the Ammerlin's, pushing him along the path they had chosen, but he had to ask. The Shinaran looked as if he did not understand it either, but he was a soldier, used to odd commands in the endless war along the Blight.
I heard rumors from the women's apartments that you were really a...
He spread gauntleted hands.
No matter. I know you deny it, just as you deny the look of your own face. Moraine said I says you're a shepherd, but I never saw a shepherd with a heron-marked blade. No matter. I'll not claim I would have chosen you myself, but I think you have it in you to do what is needed. You will do your duty, if it comes to it.
Rand wanted to say it was no duty of his, but instead he said,
Uno knows about this. Who else, Ingtar?
All the lances. When we Shinarans ride, every man knows who is next in line if the man in command falls. A chain unbroken right down to the last man left, even if he's nothing but a horseholder. That way, you see, even if he is the last man, he is not just a straggler running and trying to stay alive. He has the command, and duty calls him to do what must be done. If I go to the last embrace of the mother, the duty is yours. You will find the horn, and you will take it where it belongs. You will.
There was a peculiar emphasis in Ingtar's last words. The bundle in Rand's arms seemed to weigh 10 stone.
Light. She could be 100 leagues off, and she still reaches out and tugs the leash. This way, Rand, that way. You're the dragon reborn, Rand.
I don't want the duty, Ingtar. I will not take it.
Light, I'm just a shepherd. Why won't anybody believe that?
You will do your duty, Rand. When the man at the top of the chain fails, everything below him falls apart. Too much is falling apart. Too much already. Peace favor your sword, Randalthor.
Ingtar, I...
But Ingtar was walking away, calling to see if Uno had the scouts out yet. Rand stared at the bundle in his arms and licked his lips. He was afraid he knew what was in it. He wanted to look, yet he wanted to throw it in a fire without opening it. He thought he might, if he could be sure it would burn without anyone seeing what was inside, if he could be sure what was inside would burn at all. But he could not look there, where other eyes than his might see. He glanced around the camp. The Shinarans were unloading the pack animals, some already handing out a cold supper of dried meat and flatbread. Matt and Perrin tended their horses, and Loyal sat on a stone reading a book with his long-stemmed pipe clenched between his teeth and a wisp of smoke curling above his head. Gripping the bundle, as if afraid he might drop it, Rand sneaked into the trees. He knelt in a small clearing sheltered by thick foliaged branches and set the bundle on the ground. For a time, he just stared at it.
She wouldn't have. She couldn't.
A small voice answered,
Oh, yes, she could. She could and would.
Finally, he set about untying the small knots in the cords that bound it. Neat knots, tied with a precision that spoke loudly of Moraine's own hand. No servant had done this for her. She would not have dared let any servant see. When he had the last cord unfastened, he opened out what was folded inside with hands that felt numb, then stared at it, his mouth full of dust. It was all of one piece, neither woven nor dyed nor painted. A banner, white as snow, big enough to be seen the length of a field of battle. And across it marched a rippling figure like a serpent scaled in gold and crimson, but a serpent with 4 scaled legs, each tipped with 5 golden claws. A serpent with eyes like the sun, and a golden lion's mane. He had seen it once before, and Moraine had told him what it was. The banner of Luz Theron Talamon, Luz Theron Kinslayer in the War of the Shadow. The banner of the dragon.
Look at that! Look what he's got now!
Matt burst into the clearing, Perrin came after him more slowly.
"First fancy coats," Matt snarled, "and now a banner. We'll hear no end of lording it now, with—"
Matt got close enough to see the banner clearly, and his jaw dropped.
"Light!"
He stumbled back a step.
"Burn me!"
He had been there, too, when Moraine named the banner. So had Perrin. Anger boiled up in Rand, anger at Moraine and the Omerlin seat, pushing him, pulling him. He snatched up the banner in both hands and shook it at Matt, words boiling out uncontrollably.
"That's right, the dragon's banner!"
Matt took another step back.
"Moraine wants me to be a puppet on Tarvalin's strings, a false dragon for the Aes Sedai. She's going to push it down my throat whatever I want. But I will not be used."
Matt had backed up against a tree trunk.
"A false dragon,"
he swallowed.
"You? That's crazy."
Perrin had not retreated. He squatted down with his thick arms on his knees and studied Rand with those bright golden eyes. In the evening shadows, they seemed to shine. "If the Aes Sedai want you for a false dragon," he paused, frowning, thinking things through. Finally, he said quietly, "Rand, can you channel?" Matt gave a strangled gasp. Rand let the banner drop. He hesitated only a moment before nodding wearily.
"I did not ask for it. I don't want it, but I do not think I know how to stop it."
The room with the flies came back unbidden to his mind.
"I don't think they'll let me stop." "Burn me," Matt breathed. "Blood and bloody ashes. They'll kill us, you know. All of us. Perrin and me as well as you. If Ingtar and the others find out, they will cut our bloody throats for dark friends. Light. They'll probably think we are part of stealing the horn and killing those people in Faldara."
"Shut up, Matt," Perrin said calmly.
"Don't tell me to shut up. If Ingtar doesn't kill us, Rand will go mad and do it for him. Burn me! Burn me!"
Matt slid down the tree to sit on the ground.
"Why didn't they gentle you? If the Aes Sedai know, why didn't they gentle you? I never heard of them letting a man who can wield the power just walk away."
"They don't all know," Matt sighed.
"The Omerlin seat? She knows? Light, no wonder she looked at me so strange.
And Moraine told me I'm the dragon reborn. And then they said I could go wherever I wanted. Don't you see, Matt? They're trying to use me."
"Doesn't change you being able to channel," Matt muttered.
"If I were you, I'd be halfway to the Arath Ocean by now. And I would not stop until I found some place where there were no Aes Sedai, and never likely to be any. And no people. I mean, well..."
"Shut up, Matt," Perrin said. "Why are you here, Rand? The longer you stay around people, the more likely it is somebody will find out and send for Aes Sedai. Aes Sedai who won't tell you to go on about your business." He paused, scratching his head over that. "And Matt's right about Ingtar. I don't doubt he would name you Darkfriend and kill you. Kill all of us, maybe. He seems to like you, but he'd still do it, I think."
"A false dragon?
So would the others. Massima wouldn't need that much excuse for you. So why aren't you gone?" Rand shrugged. "I was going, but first the Omerlin came, and then the horn was stolen, and the dagger, and Moraine said Matt was dying, and... Light, I thought I could stay with you until we found the dagger, at least. I thought I could help with that. Maybe I was wrong."
"You came because of the dagger?" Matt said quietly.
He rubbed his nose and grimaced.
"I never thought of that. I never thought you wanted to... Are you feeling all right? I mean, you aren't going mad already, are you?"
Rand dug a pebble out of the ground and threw it at him.
"Ouch!"
Matt rubbed his arm.
"I was just asking. I mean, all those fancy clothes and all that talk about being a lord. Well, that isn't exactly right in the head."
"I was trying to get rid of you, fool. I was afraid I'd go mad and hurt you." His eyes dropped to the banner and his voice lowered.
"I will eventually if I don't stop it. Light, I don't know how to stop it."
"That is what I'm afraid of," Matt said, standing. "No offense, Rand, but I think I'll just sleep as far away from you as I can, if you don't mind. That's if you are staying. I heard about a fellow who could channel once. A merchant's guard told me. Before the Red Aja found him, he woke one morning and his whole village was smashed flat. All the houses, all the people, everything but the bed he was sleeping in. Like a mountain had rolled over them.
Perrin said, "In that case, Matt, you should sleep cheek by jowl with him."
"I may be a fool, but I intend to be a live fool."
Matt hesitated, looking sideways at Rand.
"Look, I know you came along to help me, and I am grateful. I really am. But you just are not the same anymore. You understand that, don't you?"
He waited as if he expected an answer. None came. Finally, he vanished into the trees, back toward the camp.
"What about you?" Rand asked.
Perrin shook his head, shaggy curls swinging.
"I don't know, Rand. You are the same, but then again you aren't. A man channeling. My mother used to frighten me with that when I was little. I just do not know."
He stretched out his hand and touched a corner of the banner.
"I think I would burn this or bury it if I were you. Then I'd run so far, so fast, no Aes Sedai would ever find me."
Matt was right about that. He stood up, squinting at the western sky, beginning to turn red with the sinking sun.
"Time to get back to the camp. You think on what I said, Rand. I'd run. But maybe you can't run. Think of that, too."
His yellow eyes seemed to look inward, and he sounded tired.
"Sometimes you can't run."
Then he was gone, too. Rand knelt there, staring at the banner spread out on the ground.
"Well, sometimes you can run," he muttered.
"Only maybe she gave me this to make me run. Maybe she has something waiting for me if I run. I won't do what she wants, I won't. I'll bury it right here.
But she said my life may depend on it, and Aes Sedai never lie so you can see it."
Suddenly his shoulders shook with silent laughter.
"Now I'm talking to myself. Maybe I am going mad already."
When he returned to the camp, he carried the banner wrapped in the canvas once more, tied with knots less neat than Moraine's had been. The light had begun to fail, and the shadow of the rim covered half the hollow. The soldiers were settling in, all with their horses by their sides, lances propped to hand. Matt and Perrin were bedding down alongside their horses. Rand gave them a sad look, then fetched Red, standing where he had been left with his reins dangling, and went to the other side of the hollow where Huron had joined Loyal. The Ogier had given over reading and was examining the half-buried stone on which he had been sitting, tracing something on the stone with the long stem of his pipe. Huron stood and gave Rand something just short of a bow.
"Hope you don't mind me making my bed here, Lord. Rand. I was just listening to the builder here."
"There you are, Rand," Loyal said. "You know, I think this stone was worked once. See, it's weathered, but it looks as if it was a column of some kind. And there are markings also. I can't quite make them out, but they look familiar somehow."
"Maybe you'll be able to see them better in the morning," Rand said.
He pulled the saddlebags from Red. "I'll be glad of your company, Huron."
"I'm glad of anybody's company who isn't afraid of me. How much longer can I have it, though?"
He shifted everything into one side of the saddlebag, spare shirts and breeches and woolen stockings, sewing kit, tinder box, tin plate and cup, a greenwood box with knife and fork and spoon, a packet of dried meat and flatbread for emergency rations, and all the other traveler's necessities, then stuffed the canvas-wrapped banner into the empty pocket. It bulged, the straps barely reaching the buckles, but then the other side bulged now too. It would do. Loyal and Huron seemed to sense his mood, leaving him in silence while he stripped saddle and bridle from Red, rubbed the big bay down with tufts of grass torn from the ground, then resaddled him. Rand refused their offer of food. He did not think he could have stomached the best meal he had ever seen just then. All three of them made their beds there beside the stone, a simple matter of a blanket folded for a pillow and cloak to cover. The camp was silent now, but Rand lay awake past the fall of full dark. His mind darted back and forth. The banner.
What is she trying to make me do?
The village.
What could kill a fade like that?
Worst of all, the house in the village.
Did it really happen?
Am I going mad already? Do I run or do I stay? I have to stay. I have to help Matt find the dagger.
An exhausted sleep finally came, and with sleep, unbidden, the void surrounded him, flickering with an uneasy glow that disturbed his dreams. Padan Fane stared northward out into the night, past the only fire in his camp, smiling a fixed smile that never touched his eyes. He still thought of himself as Padan Fane. Padan Fane was the core of him, but he had been changed, and he knew it. He knew many things now, more than any of his old masters could suspect. He had been a dark friend long years before Baalzamon summoned him and set him on the track of the three young men from Emmon's Field, distilling what he knew of them, distilling him, and feeding the essence back so that he could feel them, smell where they had been, follow wherever they ran, especially the one. A part of him still cringed, remembering what Baalzamon had done to him. But it was a small part, hidden, suppressed. He was changed. Following the three had led him into Shadar Logoth. He had not wanted to go, but he had had to obey. Then. And in Shadar Logoth, Fane drew a deep breath and fingered the ruby-hilted dagger at his belt. That had come from Shadar Logoth, too. It was the only weapon he carried, the only one he needed. It felt like a part of him. He was whole within himself now. That was all that mattered. He cast a glance to either side of his fire. The 12 dark friends who were left, their once fine clothes now rumpled and dirty, huddled in the darkness to one side, staring not at the fire but at him. On the other squatted his Trollocs, 20 in number, the all-too-human eyes in those animal-twisted men's faces, following his every move like mice watching a cat. It had been a struggle at first, waking each morning to find himself not completely whole, to find the Murdrol back in command, raging and demanding they go north, to the Blight, to Sheol Ghul. But bit by bit, those mornings of weakness grew shorter, until he remembered the feel of the hammer in his hand, driving the spikes in, and he smiled. This time it did touch his eyes with the joy of sweet memory. Weeping from the dark caught his ear, and his smile faded. I should never have let the Trollocs take so many. An entire village to slow them down. If those few houses at the ferry had not been deserted, perhaps. But Trollocs were greedy by nature, and in the euphoria of watching the Murdrol die, he had not paid attention as he should. He glanced at the Trollocs. Any one of them was nearly twice as tall as he, strong enough to break him to flinders with one hand. Yet they edged back, still crouching. Kill them. All. You may feed, but then make a pile of everything that remains. For our friends to find. Put the heads on top. Neatly now. He laughed and cut it off short. Go! The Trollocs scrambled away, drawing scythe-like swords and raising spiked axes. In moments, shrieks and bellows rose from where the villagers were bound. Pleas for mercy and children's screams were cut off by solid thuds and unpleasant squishing noises, like melons being broken. Fane turned his back on the cacophony to look at his dark friends. They were his too, body and soul, such souls as they had left. Every one of them was as mired as deeply as he had been, before he found his way out. Everyone with nowhere to go except to follow him. Their eyes clung to fearful pleading. You think they will grow hungry again before we find another village or a farm? They may. You think I will be letting them have some more of you? Well, perhaps one or two. There aren't any more horses to spare.
The others were only commoners,
one woman managed in an unsteady voice. Dirt streaked her face above a finely cut dress that marked her as a merchant and wealthy. Smears stained the good gray cloth, and a long tear marred her skirt.
They were peasants. We have served. I have served.
Fane cut her off, his easy tone making his words all the harder. What are you to me?
Less than peasants.
Herd cattle for the Trollocs, perhaps? If you want to live, cattle.
You must be useful.
The woman's face broke. She sobbed, and suddenly all the rest were babbling, telling him how useful they were. Men and women who had had influence and position before they were called to fulfill their oaths at Faldara. They spilled out the names of important, powerful people whom they knew in the Borderlands, in Kyrian, and other lands. They babbled of the knowledge they alone had of this land or that, of political situations, alliances, intrigues, all the things they could tell him if he let them serve him. The noise of them blended with the sound of the Trolloc's slaughter and fit right in. Fain ignored all of it. He had no fear of turning his back on them, not since they had seen the Fade dealt with, and went to his prize. Kneeling, he ran his hands over the ornate golden chest, feeling the power locked inside. He had to have a Trolloc carry it. He did not trust the humans enough to load it on a horse and pack saddle. Some dreams of power might be strong enough to overcome even fear of him, but Trollocs never dreamed of anything except killing. And he had not yet puzzled out how to open it. But that would come. Everything would come. Everything. Unsheathing the dagger, he laid it atop the chest before settling himself down beside the fire. That blade was a better guard than Trolloc or human. They had all seen what happened when he used it once. None would come within a span of that bared blade without his command, and then reluctantly. Lying there in his blankets, he stared northward. He could not feel Althor now. The distance between them was too great. Or perhaps Althor was doing his vanishing trick. Sometimes in the keep, the boy had suddenly vanished from Fane's senses. He did not know how, but always Althor came back, just as suddenly as he had gone. He would come back this time, too.
This time you come to me, Randalthor. Before I followed you like a dog driven on the trail, but now you follow me.
His laughter was a cackle that even he knew was mad, but he did not care. Madness was a part of him, too.
Come to me, Althor. The dance is not even begun yet. We'll dance on Toman Head, and I'll be free of you. I'll see you dead at last.